it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, a mysterious force draws Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka to a distant planet, and its inhabitants, a family of exceptionally powerful force wielders, in an attempt to determine whether Anakin is truly the chosen one. There will be dragons, griffins, and Qui-Gon, oh my! And we're talking about Overlords this week. How you doing, Chris?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Me too.
You're all conned out.
Yeah, I did. I just got back from 221B Con this weekend. I'm excited that Celebration is this coming weekend. So yeah, I'm doing good right now. So I bought some cute like little Star Wars stickers, and one of my favorite artists named Interjax, she was there again. And last year I got a picture of Padme, Leia, and Rey, but she had been working on a guy version of that. And she didn't have it finished by the time by last 221BCon. So this 221BCon, I was able to get it. And it has Anakin, Luke, and Kylo on it. And so I'm going to frame them right next to each other. And I've been, like, waiting for a year to get this picture from her.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. I was on the Strong Women in Sci-Fi panel. And it was actually interesting because we got into a couple of different talks. And we were talking about the difference between sci-fi and fantasy. And why, like, sci-fi seems so progressive, but sometimes fantasy seems like it's setting, like, female characters back. And we had, a few exceptions, like Eowyn from Lord of the Rings. She was a very progressive character. And so we were debating that, and we were talking about, I guess, how sci-fi feels like, you know, it's supposed to be the future, while fantasy oftentimes feels like it's set in, like, the past and in medieval times and stuff. So we talked about that, and then I did get to snap at this one guy, because this one guy was, we got talking about Rey in Star Wars, and this one guy was just like, I just wasn't chilling with, like, Rey being the damsel in the distress of that entire movie. And I looked at him and I was like, what? Excuse you, I'm sorry, but Finn was the damsel in distress that entire movie. He was the one that was being led around. People were saving him. Rey would grab his hand and pull him around, and she would take him to the Millennium Falcon and then fly him and then save him and then get him away from monsters and then had to go after it. I was like, Rey was not the damsel in distress of The Force Awakens. It was definitely Finn.
No, Rey could get kidnapped by Kylo Ren, but it wasn't wasn't long after she was getting kidnapped that she was taking control of the situation, you know. She definitely is, you know, I mean, she raised herself, so she's a proactive character. Yeah, I mean, people get so caught up in the jargon of it, but that's going to end up, that's going to end up on the Two True Freaks feed, I'm sure, right? That whole panel, right?
That's
the plan at this point.
Working on it. I have a lot of audio to go through. And I was also, it was really cool because I was also on the How to Podcast panel with the ladies
from...
Oh,
that's the one we were talking about putting up.
Oh,
right?
No, I recorded both panels.
Oh, good. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I'll probably do the Strong Woman in Sci-Fi on this feed, probably do How to Podcast on the general feed. But that was really fun because I got to, I feel so bad because I know I'm going to forget one of these shows. I was on there with Tony from Geek vs. Week. I remember her name is Cheryl, but I don't remember her podcast. I'm sorry, Cheryl. And then Caroline from Three Patch Podcast. And Caroline was very nice enough to record it for us. And that was really interesting, too, because I talked a lot about J-Guys and Jedi. I talked about the Two True Freaks working as a network. I even talked about, losing Sean and how that can affect your podcasting and stuff like that. So, like, we covered a lot of different things and, like, different technology and stuff. So that was a really fun panel, too. And the guys from Geek vs. Week is super awesome. It was nice getting to know them. And, I mean, yeah, the entire weekend was fun. Oh, I got to meet Martin Powell. He is an Eisner Award-winning comic book comic book writer. And but the thing that, like, for one, he was just super nice. Two, his wife's name is Leia, and she was really nice. And three, his mentor was freaking Ray Bradbury.
Yay.
And so he had heroes. I know. And so like he was just like telling me all these stories about Ray Bradbury.
Oh,
and I was just like,
wow.
I was like, this is amazing. I recorded, I had an interview with him, but I also went to one of his panels, and in his panels he was talking about like how Ray would write and stuff like that. But we talked about it in the interview, and at some point I will have that transcribed and put up for What the Fangirl. So yeah. So that will be coming along at some point. Well, it's going to take a couple weeks for me to get through all the audios and stuff, so it's not going to be right away, but Martin Powell was really super nice and got to see a lot of my friends and got to touch base with my friend Lindsay Fay, who is an author, and one of her books just got optioned for a movie, so that's exciting. We talked about that, so it was all in all, it was just a really fun weekend.
Excellent.
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 Excellent. Unlike this episode for you, but I liked it.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a little bit of difference of opinion, I have a feeling. We discussed this a little bit before we started recording, but we'll find out where we diverge on this one.
Yeah. Can I make a guess of where we might diverge on?
Yeah.
Because I know you like plot, and I like character, so I think you're going to diverge on the plot, and I'm going to like hold on to the character work.
I got a little bit. I got problems with a little bit of both of those, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know I've talked about it before. I like the Mortis arc.
Maybe not so much as like the characters not acting correctly within their characters, but just what was being worked on in the character arcs, let's say.
Yeah, because I mean, I talked about it before. I mean, I like and dislike the Mortis arc for multiple reasons. And I like this arc up into the final episode where I have a massive glaring problem with it. And it kind of ruined the entire fucking arc for me.
Ooh.
So I like everything in this arc up till that point, which just destroys the arc for me. So I forgot this one was a standalone, so that really helped me a lot on this one. But I know the other two are going to be much lower for me.
You know, now I'm thinking, I won't say what it is, but I think I remember what it might be.
You know, you had mentioned last week you couldn't remember if you had seen this episode or not. So you had seen this
I one. Have seen this episode before, yes.
Okay, because I was about I know you've talked about stuff in season 4, so when you were like, I haven't seen it past this arc, I was like, but you've talked about stuff in season 4.
It's more like this is where my memory starts to go on Clone Wars. But we'll see. Yeah, no, I definitely saw this episode before, and yeah, I think my feelings were fairly similar.
I know my feelings have changed.
There might be a reason that I have a little dark spot where the Mortis arc is. That might just be it. That I have a dark spot on season 3 where the Mortis arc happened.
Yeah. I definitely know. I'll get into it in my notes. But having watched Rebels helped me a lot on this episode. But I'll get that into my episodes. My notes. Let's get started.
All right. Let's go All right. with this.
You sound so excited.
Woohoo!
Let's get started with this
stuff.
Alright, coffee is in my belly. Alright. Overlords is the 59th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on January 28th, 2011. It was written by Christian Taylor and directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information for you. Liam Neeson and Pernilla August both reprised their roles from the prequel movies to voice Qui-Gon Jinn and Shmi Skywalker in this episode. Sam Witwer, who is the voice of Darth Maul in Clone Wars and Rebels, is the voice of the son. I definitely put brother, but he's actually the son. Lloyd Shear voices the father. He played the Moper in Revenge of the Nerds and has done voice work in Archer in the Cars franchise and several video game series like Diablo, God of War, Dishonored, and Starhawk. Adrienne Wilkinson voices the daughter. Some of her work includes Xena Warrior Princess, Undressed, and Days of Our Lives. She also voiced the character Maris Brood in the Legends of in Legends Star Wars: The Force Unleashed franchise. The Sun and the Story of the Mortis trilogy was created by George Lucas, the original creator of Star Wars. Originally, the specters of the Sith Lords Darth Bane and Darth Revan, two of the Sith Lords from the Legends brand, were supposed to be behind the Sun's influence and complete fall to the dark side. However, this was ultimately cut from the Mortis arc, as both Lucas and the Clone Wars supervising director Dave Filoni believed that the Sith Lords existing beyond death or outside of the Force contradicted the established aspects and the meaning of the Force in Star Wars canon. Some of the character concept designs of the Sun and his gargoyle form were created by Randy Bantog. In the spin-off series, The Clone Wars, In the spin-off series to The Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, Filoni and lead character designer Killian Plunkett created the character with an unintentional resemblance to the Sun, the Pawlian villain known as the Grand Inquisitor. Filoni believed that the close resemblance made sense, as the Sun's arc in The Clone Wars was metaphorically intended to represent both the past and the future within the Star Wars lore. This is also the debut of Ahsoka using two lightsabers, but there was never a scene of her making her second one. Dave Filoni said in an interview with IGN, "My idea was always that Ahsoka was a pretty small girl. She's pretty diminutive, that's a word I can never say, diminutive, compared to, say, Grievous, who's massive."
At least she's not rural.
Yeah, shut up. Asshole. So in order to... you jerk. You're wondering why I can't say rural. Go back an episode or two. So in order to keep up with her overpowering with her overpowering physical opponents, Anakin is the one who told her to fashion the secondary blade so she can be blocking and cutting inside. Because it's a weapon that she can use with her speed, and it really complements her speed. Okay, now, I'm about to do the episode featurette. And fucking Dave Filoni talked for a page. It was 4.5 minutes of just Dave talking. My God. Dave, why do you do this to me? All right. In the episode featurette, Dave Filoni says, "Overlords is probably one of the most incredible things we've been asked to do in this series. Not in the way of effects necessarily, or animation or visuals, but more the story that George laid out for us is something I think we all as Star Wars fans, as lovers of mythology, wanted to delve into for a very long time, which was much more intensive look at the Force and Force wielders and how it's used and this whole prophecy of the Chosen One and what does that mean. I was actually out of the room for the first 15-20 minutes of George's pitch for the Force wielders. I remember coming back into the room and the writers were all wrapped up looking at George. They saw me come into the room and they looked at me and went, 'You gotta hear this.' George sat me down and started explaining that there's these gods, and they wield the Force, and they're much more powerful than Jedi Knights. And this one turns into a gargoyle, and this one turns into a griffin. And he's just saying all this stuff, and I'm like, wow, this is pretty intense. And in the end, Christian Taylor, who wrote it, had a tremendous task on his hands trying to figure out how do I take all these things that George just explained, and we outlined together, how do I put a voice to that? And to his credit, he did an amazing job. When we first talked about having Qui-Gon appear and George brought up Obi-Wan seeing an apparition of Qui-Gon Jinn, I thought, wow, it'd be incredible to get Liam Neeson to come back and do the voice of Qui-Gon Jinn. I thought the fans would just go nuts if we could get him back and do it. So I went to the one person in the galaxy that I knew that can make this happen. I went and talked to Lynn Hale. If you don't know who Lynn Hale is and you're a big fan of Star Wars, you need to do some research and work because she is a tremendous force in the company. She has been here for a very long time. She was in contact with all the actors from the original movies. Lynn came in and watched the footage. This was a classic for her and she just went, 'Oh my gosh, we have to get him to do this. Not only that, we have to get Pramila August to come back to come play Shmi.' So next thing I know, Lynn's on the phone with Pernilla and Liam, and she has Pernilla coming back to reprise her role as Shmi Skywalker, which is amazing. Then she sent the footage of Qui-Gon to Liam. I don't know if that helped or not, but I like to think that it did. He decided to come on board and do the show. I'm so grateful for that, because he really didn't have to do that. I think it really speaks to how much he really enjoyed working on Star Wars. It was such a nice thing to do. The whole time working with him, Matt Wood and I were just sitting there, and Leon and Liam would say these lines and say Obi-Wan, and I would just look at Matt Wood and say, hey, it's Qui-Gon talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi. The end.
I actually had notes that whoever did Obi-Wan's or Qui-Gon's voice did a great job, but whoever did Shmi's voice only did a so-so job.
It was actually the actors.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was a great Qui-Gon.
Good job, Liam Neeson. You did yourself well.
Yes.
You know who also does himself well?
Oh, ho, 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 ho. Yay!
Hey!
That worked out well. I think your brain clicked into it about a half second before mine did, though.
Oh, man.
Whee!
We did it! We made a masturbation joke! Yay!
Hey, it's better than the space platitude anyway.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right, you guys. You guys can figure this one out.
I think it's funny for our thing. I don't think it really works for the episode.
Balance is found in the one who faces his guilt. In bed.
Ooh, that's what you get for cheating on people. You got official guilt. Actually, it doesn't work as well as I thought.
Yeah.
Yoda, you tried this week. Mm-hmm.
Yoda, go back home and be alone.
to do yourself well?
Oh, nobody does it better.
That's a James Bond reference, actually.
James Bond is one of those things I've never, like, crazy got into.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I wouldn't know what James Bond to recommend to you, because a lot of times, I guess more modern James Bond, because a lot of it tends upon when you, which James, you know, that's the thing is, I think favorite James Bonds end up to be like, which James Bond was James Bond when you were 10 years old, you know?
Yeah.
But you were watching James Bond when you were 10 years old, so you'll never get that.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I've seen more Austin Powers than James Bond.
Right.
So kind of like in my head, like whenever I think James Bond, I kind of think of Austin Powers.
So you might want to go back to the Sean Connery, Roger Moore era.
I know I've seen Goldfinger, but I saw it when I was like super little.
Yeah.
Like maybe 7, so I don't really remember it. But yeah, I don't know. I always just think of Mike Myers as Dr. Evil and just go and gold member, and he's just like, it's gold. and Seth Green before he was taken away into the realms of Robot Chicken and
he was
Family Guy.
Teenager.
And he had his midnight blue hair. I remember that too, that midnight blue hair, because my sister was in love with it, and she was like, Mom, I want to dye my hair midnight blue like Seth Green. And my mom was like, you're 13, calm down. Calm down. And that's when I learned what the color midnight blue was, because I didn't know what midnight blue even was. And then I found out that it's a color.
It's Seth Green's hair. Ironically, his name wasn't Seth Blue.
All right. So act one?
Act one. Let's get started on this.
I'm actually really excited to talk to you about this.
I'm excited to talk about it, too.
Because we rarely disagree on stuff. I'm so excited. Tonight we might fight, Honeywell.
I actually, when I popped up our sheet here to read to look, because you'd said you had a lot of notes, and I'm like, okay, well, no, this isn't too bad. And then I go down to check out the number, and I'm like, ooh, this is gonna be fun.
Yay! We so rarely disagree, so I'm very excited about this. So this could be like a mean shag fight all over again.
Yeah,
nah.
Maybe I'm not quite that much of an asshole.
As I say, you're much nicer than Shag, so. All right, so, act one. So way, way out in wild space, the Jedi intercept a message, and it's using ancient Jedi texts from, like, MySpace or Dead Journal or something that's over 2,000 years old. Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Ahsoka are sent to investigate it. So the Golden Trio is back together! Yeah! So the cruiser that's supposed to meet up with them, with Captain Rex, Captain Rex is on a cruiser, apparently, because I don't know how to write sentences. Anakin Skypes his boyfriend, and he's all like, hey, Boo, we're here, but we don't see you. And Rex is like, Boo, we're at the rendezvous point, and you're not here. And Obi-Wan is like, ooh, a a mystery, because I now dictate that Obi-Wan likes reading young adult mystery novels. Suddenly, the Jedi ship loses communication with Rex, and the power on the ship dies. But then everything comes back on suddenly, and they're all like, ooh. And so for half a second, they're all happy, until they see a black floating diamond the size of a planet just chilling out in space. And the big diamond pulls their ship into it, and it opens up, and they fly into a light. Suddenly, they wake up, and they've crash-landed on some planet. They check over the ship's systems, and they can't even tell what part of the galaxy they are in, and why their ship isn't even responding to them. And Ahsoka's like, fuck this noise, and she goes outside. And the guys follow her to gaze upon a sunny, strange planet. And they're all like, did we go through the Narnia cabinet and ended up in Middle Earth or something? And suddenly a woman appears and asks Anakin if he's the one. And Anakin is like, hey, pretty lady with the plunging neckline dress that's hot like my wife. Can I help you? And Ahsoka gets a little bit more queer, and Obi-Wan is awkward just seeing this woman. And she introduces herself as Daughter, and she will take them to him so they can get help. But they must find shelter by nightfall. And Anakin is like, guys, this place is fucking weird. What's happening? And they have no choice but to follow the lady. Walking along the ridge with Daughter, the Jedi start compiling their notes about this place. As the day progresses, the seasons change. There are no animals here. And most importantly, the Force is incredibly strong here. And they're like, Miss Daughter Lady, where are we going and who are you exactly? And she tells them that they're going to go to the Father. They are the middle, the beginning, and the end. Time changes, and the plants around them start withering. The side of the ridge crumbles, and a rock falls. Anakin pushes Daughter out of the way, and Ahsoka saves Obi-Wan from falling off the cliff. A huge rock falls and separates the two groups. Anakin tries to help up Daughter, and she's like, boy, don't you touch me! And she says the rock slide is the work of her brother, and for Anakin to stay put, she leaves him. Anakin calls Obi-Wan to tell him to go back to the ship while Anakin sees where Daughter has went. But their communicators fizzle out. Ahsoka and Obi-Wan have no choice but to head back to the ship. What'd you think of Act 1, Chris?
Oh. I thought it was
funny that they keep
distress codes for 2,000 years. That's a lot of codes to check through every time you're checking something like that. Yeah, this is where, like, you know how I applaud Clone Wars and Rebels for trying different stuff. I think this is one of the trying different stuff that didn't quite work. And it's like, it's very weird because it's very similar to what was tried with the Night Sisters, which is a more mystic element of the Force. I don't think it works here. And now that I hear that George Lucas, this almost seems like a whim of George Lucas is an idea. And it's funny because I'm, you know, as we go through the three parts of this, the three, acts of this show, it just starts piling up and this is something we talked about in the beginning before we were recording. You were thinking that I was going to really like this show because of the visual and strong visual and color elements of it. But it was weird because it was all just sort of a mishmash of different religious and mystical iconographies, but sort of earth ones. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like this time, well, we got a little, well, the world at first with its floating, with the floating land masses sort of reminded me of the Avatar world. But it was also a little video game-like, you know, like we're going on our video game quests or D&D-like. And the like double pyramid thing is, you know, Egyptian. But they played it as a visual and a sort of reference of Star Wars, A New Hope, where they're getting sucked into the Death Star at first. You know, it's very much like that. But it's, I mean,
I haven't seen it, but I kind of thought, didn't Close Encounters of the Third Kind have a ship that opens, a dark ship, and it's like light?
And then just light pouring out of it. Yes, very much like that. Actually, you're right. And the way that pyramid is shaped almost echoes the gangplank that comes out of the, you know, there's a, when the, it's, what happens is the ship opens up, a gangplank comes out, and the light, you know, as soon as it cracks, light is just pouring out of it. Yeah,
see,
it's very much
the,
like that. Yeah, you're
the
right.
The pyramid, though, reminded me of the Sith temple in Rebels that Kanan,
yes,
Ezra, and Ahsoka went to.
Yes. And I think that, like, if we take the Night Sisters, this element, and that element, I think the Night Sisters, System of Mirrors, and the Sith Temple work really well. This one was one they threw up against the wall. I don't think it has too, it's just too much of a mishmash of, you know, I mean the sister is very Lord of the Rings elfin, you know, or fairy sort of, or, you know, from a fantasy thing. There's, you know, she's you get that sense that Anakin looks at her and is like, wow, she's beautiful, because she's like a being of pure light or something. But as such, that doesn't make her much of a character. It makes her just sort of an iconic thing, which reminds me of, like, video games and D&D adventures. It's like, you're flying through space, and then all of a sudden you pass out, and you wake up on this planet, and there's this person, she says, come, we have a quest. Oh, my brother is causing mischief, you know? A mystery. It's very fantasy story. But it, to me, it doesn't feel of Star Wars. It feels like Star Wars guest starring in another world, you know? There was an issue of, I can't remember the name of it or the number of it off the top of my head, of the original Marvel Star Wars, that was basically an issue of John Carter, Warlord of Mars, that they had laying around in case they had to, and they just changed the art and put the Star Wars characters in, and it felt like that happened, you know. This is sort of similar to that to me. It feels that they feel like characters out of place. They're reacting correctly as they would with their characters. It's not like someone came in and wrote the characters, you know, everything all wrong. It's just these characters are in a world that's operating on a different sort of logic than Star Wars does. And as it goes on, I was able to put a more fine-tuned point on what it was that I don't like about that, you know, that I didn't like about that. But that's all my notes for the first part.
Because, like, that's why I was, like, so surprised when you... Because I know how much you love, like, you know, Zillow Beast episode. It's a monster movie. Or, like, Holocron Heist. It's a heist movie. Mm-hmm. Or, like, the Bounty Hunters episode. It's a tribute to samurai movies. And so that's, like, I was like, okay, I bet Chris is going to like this because they're just going... I always joke that this is the Lord of the Rings trilogy. The series episode, because it's super fantasy. So that's why I was like so surprised. I was like, really, you don't like these? I thought this would be like right up your alley.
It didn't work though. They didn't. It doesn't feel incorporated into the Star Wars feel to me. There's too many elements of it that almost visually and conceptually draw from. Even though they're you know, fantasy stories. Or religions, you know, there's stuff that's based in the arcane and the conceptual, but it's stuff familiar. You know, there's a lot of Egyptian sort of looking stuff in here, and when you have in Star Wars and you have, say, a pyramid, and then the guys look a little bit Egyptian, and you start thinking, well, are they trying to say that maybe these guys, you know, being timeless beings, that some of this has made it to Earth, you know, or eventually does make it to Earth since it's a long time ago, but they're timeless, so it doesn't matter, you know. So it almost, when they start doing that, it's almost like it's tying it into our reality, and I don't want that. I don't want to see a connection between the Egyptians and the Star Wars universe. Although I'm sure that people would find that very exciting. Some people would. I don't. I like them being their own separate things, you know. I like the Star Wars universe sort of, you know, almost like evolution. Like, you know, two things that have gone on diverging evolutionary tracks. So you still have bipeds and, humanoids and stuff, but everything sort of has a little different logic to it. And this one has a little too much crossover into stuff that's visually Earth-like to me.
I can see that. I only had three notes for this section. My really, really shallow note is, oh my god, I'm so happy to have the Golden Trio back together. I'm so happy. it's just such a great, cause, you know, Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Ahsoka have been separated pretty much a good chunk of this season.
Pretty they much almost all of it.
Yeah, so I'm so happy to have the three of them back together again. So that was just like, yay! Okay, I have a dumb question, and it's dumb because we literally watched the prequels like 4 months ago, but I cannot remember it. Does Anakin know that he's the Chosen One? Because I know that Qui-Gon knew, and the Jedi Council knew, and Obi-Wan calls Anakin the Chosen One at Episode 3, but at this point in the timeline, does Anakin himself know that he is the Chosen One? I just can't remember.
I was thinking about this, actually, before I was going to bring this up. I'm not sure. I don't think, and I like to think, that he didn't know. That it was something that they were like, we can't tell this guy he might be the Chosen One, especially the way he is, you know?
Yeah.
And even if you do tell him that he's the Chosen One, that might affect him being the Chosen... You know, it's something that I would think the Jedi wouldn't say to him.
Yeah.
Wouldn't let on to him that much.
Because in the Obi-Wan and Anakin comics... it has Anakin when he's much younger, like Ahsoka's age, and Mace and Obi-Wan are talking about it. Mace Windu is like, I don't think he's the Chosen One, and Obi-Wan's like, he's totally the Chosen One. And so I know the Council knows about it, and then I'm going to bring it up in Act 2.
You'd think Anakin would be bringing it up if he knew he was the Chosen One. He'd be like, come on, Master, I'm the Chosen, you know, or something,
yeah.
Or even seriously at some points.
And I kind of answered my own question, and I'm going to bring it up again in Act 2. Because there's a part in Act 2 where the brother is like, the son is like, he's the Chosen One, and both Obi-Wan and Ahsoka react. And so I was like, wait, does Ahsoka know that he's the Chosen One? Who knows he's
they
the Chosen
all know
One? I don't
they,
know.
Everybody but Anakin knows, probably.
So,
always
I mean,
the
it's
last
just
one
kinda,
to
like,
know. But
yeah, so like that was like really confusing, because I literally can't remember if Qui-Gon was like, Anakin, you're the Chosen One. And he's like, thanks, Liam Neeson. Like, I cannot remember Episode 1 if he knows.
I like to think that the first time Anakin heard about him being the Chosen One in Episode 3, when he's laying there with his limbs cut off, burning up, and Obi-Wan's yelling at him.
Yeah.
Know? I think that, like, just is story-wise, that's way more potent than him knowing it all. That's what that's one of my big diddly doos with this episode.
Yeah,
is but yeah, I want that to be that the point where Anakin hears about him being the Chosen One at the very last moment, and it sort of makes sense that it's in the back of his mind when he becomes Darth Vader and eventually kills Palpatine, you know.
Yeah,
so I now that I hear about George Lucas's story ideas for this one, I'm thinking this might be George Lucas's way of shoring up the Chosen One. You know, he was like, well, maybe I didn't do that quite the way I wanted to, and this was his way of sort of, you know, shoring that up and trying to make it make some sort of sense or some sort of deeper sense or something, and I totally don't think it works.
You know, it's very interesting now that I'm thinking about Obi-Wan, because, I mean, this isn't in my notes, but, like, Obi-Wan at this point, like, thinks Anakin's the Chosen One, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think he, yeah.
But the thing is, we just saw in Twin Suns and Rebels, he now thinks that Luke is the Chosen One. And Dave Filoni talked about that, because a lot of fans after Twin Suns came out and, like, Obi-Wan and Maul had their fight and everything, a lot of those fans were just like, wait, is Luke supposed to be the Chosen One then? And Dave Filoni said, it's not between Anakin and Luke. It's the fact that Obi-Wan thinks Luke's the Chosen One. No one else matters. It's just what Obi-Wan now thinks. And right. So it's interesting, because at this point he thinks it's Anakin, but later on in Rebels he thinks it's Luke. So, like, that's it's interesting to see Obi-Wan now and then seeing Obi-Wan where we recently just watched them, because that's going to be a big character change.
I think we're starting to see maybe a questioning of the whole, like, maybe you shouldn't think about chosen ones, you know? maybe, concentrating on someone being the chosen one is not a good thing to do. It's sort of maybe better to just sort of let things go, and maybe there always is a chosen one, and it just flips back and forth, you know. But Obi-Wan would be someone who would, you know, Obi-Wan could just be, you know, because of his age and his association with Qui-Gon and Anakin, he's an inherent to the prophecy of the chosen one. So he's like, he obviously gave up on Anakin being the chosen one at that moment, so instead of being like, well, maybe there wasn't a chosen one, he's just of the thought that, like, there has to, well, who's the chosen, you know, then who is the chosen one?
Yeah, I didn't think about that. And then my last note, it's just kind of another shallow note. You know who the daughter reminds me of? Do you remember, like, a long time ago in season one during the Blue Waffle Virus episodes, we met the angel?
Mm-hmm.
The design of the angel reminded me of the daughter and vice versa. And I remember the first time I saw the Mortis arc, I thought the daughter was the same race of the angels until they later explained they were force wielders. Because they both have that, like, kind of white, glowy presence.
I remember being a pure light.
Yeah, and I remember, like, when I watched the Mortis arc for the first time, I remembered the angel and it glowing, and I was like, are they the same race? And, of course, they explained it, but that's always who the daughter reminds me of. And I think that when we did the Blue Waffle Virus, I think I mentioned that, too. That the angel reminded me of the daughter in the Sarg. I could be wrong. It's been like a year since we've done that, so. But yeah, so that always, they always reminded me of each other. So just a little note. So, all right, well, that's all I had. Act 2.
You ready for Act 2? Okay.
Act 2 is where
almost all my notes
are.
Let's get even deeper into this. Yeah, it's this one's digging it deeper for me.
Yeah, and I'm gonna be digging up, and you're gonna be digging down.
Yeah, dirt's gonna be flying both ways.
Did you say what?
So the dirt's going to be flying both ways.
I thought you said cats. Cats are going to
be flying. The cats are going to be flying both ways. I'm a porcupine. Ha ha. Yeah, I'm just spouting, yeah, mass random statements, non sequiturs.
All right, Act 2. A storm rolls in and night falls very quickly. Ahsoka and Obi-Wan return to find that their ship is missing. The plants and everything is dead around them. Suddenly, a man appears behind them. And it's the Grand Inquisitor from Rebels! I'm kidding. But just like I said in the extra information, the Grand Inquisitor's design is based on this guy, so I just had to make a joke. Anyway, the dude gets right up in Obi-Wan's face, and he asks if Anakin is the Chosen One. Ahsoka and Obi-Wan both whip out their lightsabers, ready to fuck him up for mentioning their family bro Anakin. And the guy extinguishes their lightsabers. And Obi-Wan is like, oh my god, a Sith! And the guy is like, a Sith? That's cute. But no. And yes. Yes and no. Both. Both is good. I'll be both. And he turns into a dragon and he flies away. And Ahsoka is like, oh, that was weird. This is all weird, right? Like, that was strange. And Obi-Wan is like, it's raining. Let's just go find a cave or whatever and think long and hard about whatever the hell is happening to us. And up in a monastery that looks like it's missing a Sauron Middle Earth eye, Anakin rushes in to find an old man. In a very unlike Anakin move, he takes a seat in front of the man and asks questions. He asks questions to this guy, and Obi-Wan would be very proud of him. The man wants to learn the truth of who Anakin really is, but with this storm, the old man invites Anakin to be his guest for that night. Out in the storm of death, Ahsoka and Obi-Wan take shelter in a cave. While Ahsoka naps, Obi-Wan suddenly hears a voice. And it's freaking Qui-Gon Jinn! Or at least his ghost. Qui-Gon Ghost explains that the planet is a conduit for all of the Force to flow through. It's an amplifier and a magnet for the Force. He also warns Obi-Wan that three are here looking for Anakin, believing him to be the Chosen One. Qui-Gon warns that if Anakin doesn't realize his balance in the Force, this is a super dangerous place for him to be. Qui-Gon Ghost out! Mic drop. Back at Sauron's tower, Anakin is woken up by his dead mom, Shmi! And Anakin rightfully freaks out. Shmi wants to know what his pain is about her, and he's all like, Mom, I couldn't save you. And then I murdered some guys. And she says he needs to let go all of his guilt. And he's like, but I know love too. I failed myself as a Jedi because I can't let go of my love either. And then Shmi gets all demon-like, claiming that Padme is a poison for him. And it is not part of his destiny. And Anakin calls bullshit like he sees it. And for a moment, Shmi turns into a dragon that the man from earlier was. And then she leaves. So Shmi out. Mic drop. And now it's Ahsoka's turn. She gets a vision of her future self. Future Ahsoka warns her that there is seeds of the dark side in Anakin. And he's planting it inside her as well. Anakin is, Ahsoka is all like, yo, I stand by my master because he's different, so back off. And older Ahsoka warns that she will never see her future if she remains Anakin's student. Obi-Wan awakens Ahsoka, and Ahsoka is like, we gotta find Anakin. Now, he's in trouble. Anakin confronts the father, calling him a Sith Lord. Father is like, ha, that's cute. I'm more like my good old buddy Bindu, to be honest. You humans have such simple minds. And then he lightsaber cock-blocks Anakin, shoving his blade back into his saber shaft. I made a penis joke. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Scandal, the children.
Hey, that's not funny.
He's shoving back in my shaft.
I have to see a doctor about this.
Now, I'm just thinking of uncircumcised penises. It's okay. They look like they have sweaters. They look like they wear turtlenecks.
Anyone? They look like the dude from that movie, man.
No! Uncircumcised penises look like they have turtlenecks on, and they're really cute. Anyway, he explains what is happening to us. Anyway, he explains that he is a Force wielder, and few are still alive that know about their existence. He says that the sun was the image of Shmi Skywalker, and he's like, Anakin, you're really sad, bro. And my son was having some dark side fun with you. And Anakin is not amused. And the father explains that they're super powerful in the Force, that they had to leave the temporal world to live as anchorites away from people. The father laments that he loves his kids, but they could destroy the universe. And father says when he heard that the Chosen One had been found, he had to meet Anakin for himself. And Anakin's like, there's no such thing as a Chosen One, bro. And father is like, tell you what, you do this one test for me, and then you guys can go. Anakin's like, well, I guess I have no choice. Oh my god, I want to go first for one note.
Okay.
So now Anakin knows about the Chosen One, but he didn't know what it was in the first act.
Yes. Right, okay. And that's one of the things I don't like, is he shouldn't know that.
Maybe he knows about the myth of the Chosen One, he just doesn't know that he's the Chosen One.
Well, it also is something that he can totally write off as being the delusion of these guys, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, we came to this weird planet and they said I'm the Chosen One, you know? Whatever.
No, that's like a lot of hero journeys, though. Like, if you read anything, right. Like, take something like fucking, like, Hunger Games. I know you haven't read Hunger Games, but everyone's like, Katniss, you're the girl on fire. And she's like, I'm not a hero. What the hell? And then she had to become a hero. I mean, that's true for, like, you know, a lot of hero stories. That they don't believe that they're a hero, but they end up becoming a hero.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, Anakin, when they say you're the Chosen One, he might think he's the Chosen One for them and not just the general, you know, Jedi prophecy Chosen One. That's why I don't like all this. It muddles it instead of clearing it, but it doesn't muddle it in a good, like, X-Files sort of way that makes you go like, ooh, interesting. It's very D&D. It's very Deus Ex Machina, where, you know, it's like, we're going to take you to, you know, where suddenly you're in a mystical place and you have mystical people telling you things, you know, and just sort of like walking you through this D&D journey. I did like the Bendu. I mean, the conversation was very Bendu, but I like this guy is more like a chess piece slash character out of a tarot deck in a Egyptian temple. Whereas Zabendu was kind of a neat, or, you know, he was of the earth, you know, or of the, you know, of the, he was very naturalistic, you know, he was like an animal, and
yeah, and, I mean, he says it himself, I'm a rock in a stream.
Right, he was very, very of the natural world, Whereas this guy is sort of like a character, you know, in a D&D adventure that you would meet and be like, ah, you finally found the father who will tell you, you know, what the, you know, that you're the chosen one and all that. So, yeah, it's, I mean, I'm okay with stories like that, but not as much in Star Wars, you know?
Yeah.
The hero's journey in Star Wars, I like it to be more on a real level, you know, like Luke Skywalker, where it's like you're going from one place to another. It's visceral, instead of being symbolic in this way, you know, on a symbolic level.
Yeah, I'm typing notes as responses to you. Sorry.
Oh, okay. That's about all I had for notes on this one.
Just to touch on two things, because I thought about this as you were saying it. You know, so often we've talked about how often the Jedi come across as Deus Ex Machina, because they just, like, jump in and they save the day at the last minute. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny that you said that these gods are, like, the Deus Ex Machina of these guys.
Right.
Because now the Jedi are not in that position. They're all just like,
Now they're on the chessboard. Yeah, now they're the pawns on the chessboard.
And then you mentioned, like, you know, the hero's journey and stuff like that, and then I started thinking, who is the hero on the journey of Clone Wars? I know. I mean, I would say...
I'd want to say Ahsoka more than Anakin, really.
Dude, I was thinking Ahsoka, too. Because, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I've said it before. Like, Clone Wars is just six seasons of how Anakin became Vader. But really, I mean, Ahsoka is the hero at the end of all this, because she's the one that goes on to the Rebel Alliance.
It can't be any of the movie characters, because they're already sort of locked in their story arcs, you know? You can have a real life-changing story events for Ahsoka and real growth beyond a certain point. You can only grow Anakin and Obi-Wan to episode 3, to just before episode 3, actually. So it would make sense, you know? And she's the most developed main, you know, original character in that show.
I would say that Ahsoka has the hero story. Anakin would have the anti-hero story, because as she gets better, this is his downfall.
He's going down. He's sort of the mentor in some ways.
Yeah.
But that's sort of shared between him and Obi-Wan in ways.
Yeah. Okay, so for my wall of fucking notes. one of my favorite parts of this episode is the fact that we get a lot of Obi-Wan and Ahsoka together by themselves. They're so rarely paired off that it's great when the two of them are just a duo. Obi-Wan is still a teacher, even if Anakin isn't his Padawan, and Ahsoka isn't his Padawan either. But he still takes her under his wing to help her. So I'm guessing that the Jedi Master Padawan lineage is important to say, like, you know, Windu went to Depa Bialba, who went to Kanan, who went to Ezra, and we've talked about that before. So Ahsoka is in Obi-Wan's, like, master Padawan lineage of all that. But
yeah,
grandpa. Yeah, and that's, you know, I almost made a joke about that. But it's so cool to see Obi-Wan taking Ahsoka under his wing, because, I mean, he's still a master and she's still, you know, a Padawan learner. But we don't often get just the two of them together, and so I really like that pairing, and I wish we got it more. Because they do also have a very different dynamic. I actually would have liked to see the two of them together. Because, like, when already Ahsoka's starting to mature. I would have liked to see the two of them together, maybe, like, earlier, say, like, season one, when she was more reckless.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when we get the most of her and Anakin. But she's kind of chilled out more. So, like, in this episode, she's a little bit more chill with Obi-Wan.
I think Obi-Wan he doesn't want to interfere, probably, he probably wants to interfere as little as possible in Anakin's training of her.
Yeah, but I mean, I would have liked to see, like, maybe an episode of them earlier together.
Yeah.
Like, where she does something reckless and he kind of chides her a little bit. But I really like seeing the two of them together. They're so rarely alone that I really enjoyed that for this episode, because it's just such a different dynamic for the two of them. And just hearing Obi-Wan just calling her Ahsoka, I'm just like, Grandpa, you love your baby. Grandpa. Okay, so to follow my up a question from Act 1, because I said I would talk about this, I asked if Anakin knew he was the Chosen One, and we talked about that. But when the brother asks Obi-Wan and Ahsoka if Anakin's the Chosen One, both Ahsoka and Obi-Wan are defensive and ready to fight him. So they both clearly know that Anakin is the Chosen One. So my question is it wide knowledge throughout the Jedi that Anakin is the Chosen One? Or does Ahsoka and Obi-Wan know, since they're Anakin's master and Padawan? Is it just the two of them? Or is it like, the council and the two of them, or is it all the Jedi? Like, that is just so not clear. Like, who knows that he's the Chosen One?
I don't know if they know he's the Chosen One or if it's just rumored that he's possibly the Chosen One. You know, this guy, Anakin, they're thinking he might be the Chosen One, you know? And I think they become defensive because if he is the Chosen One, then there's going to be a lot of people who are going to want to kill him or bend him to their will or turn him to the dark side or all, you know. So if he is the Chosen One, he's a great, potentially a great danger, you know, stated before.
And I can also read this as Ahsoka reacting because here's this creepy guy in the middle of a storm and he's just like, hey, where's your friend? And she's like, why do you want my friend?
Yeah.
But like, I could see where it's the council, and Obi-Wan, of course, knows because he's on the council, and maybe someone told Ahsoka because she's Anakin's Padawan, so she needed to be aware of it. Or maybe, like, Obi-Wan told her or something. Like, maybe the council didn't tell her, but Obi-Wan did.
Or there's just chatter and rumors and stuff like that.
But I could see Ahsoka knowing just because she's Anakin's Padawan. Uh-huh. But then other, like, run-of-the-mill Jedi don't know. Like, you know, I can't see Barra so free. Or, like, you know, like, knowing Anakin's the Chosen One. So, like, I could see, though, her knowing just because she's his Padawan, so someone told her.
Yeah, possibly. Or they might want to keep it from her for all the same reasons you don't want Anakin to find out.
But, I mean, she clearly reacted when the brother was like, hey, is he the Chosen One? And she was just like, ah, I'm ready to fight.
That so might have been just, yeah, but, you know, that might have just been a reaction to, like, yo, this is really weird. And somebody saying he might be the Chosen One, they might want him for some reason or something. It just made her defensive. And who knows, she might have been, Obi-Wan might have pushed his trigger on his lightsaber a millionth of a second before her, and she's like, oh, Obi-Wan's lighting up, you know?
Yeah.
You never know what goes on in those Jedi's heads.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess the point I'm trying to make is, this is very unclear.
Yes.
Sam Witwer has been Maul for so long that I'm so used to hearing him use his Maul voice, so it's really great to hear him play another character and stretch those voice acting skills as the brother. So that was just another note. So what did you think of Qui-Gon's Force Ghost? Because up until now, we've only seen Obi-Wan and Yoda as Force Ghosts, and then Anakin's Force Ghost joined them in Episode 6. So what did you think of Qui-Gon showing up?
I thought it was great. I think Obi-Wan should have been a little more emotional and thrown for a loop, seeing as how their parting was so dramatic, you know? And such a big part of his life, you would think it would have been a little more. Obi-Wan's known for his poker face, but this would have been a good opportunity, you know. Once again, you're not a Star Trek watcher, but in the original Star Trek, there was one where Spock thought that Kirk was dead, and then saw him again, and like breaks into a big smile, is like Jim, you know, and then is like, I'm very glad to see you, Captain. I would have liked to have a little more emotional from Obi-Wan, just like Master, you know, But at the same time, their guard's up, so it might, you know, they might not take it. He's not maybe taking it all with a grain of salt, you know.
The way he reacts, I think he thought it was a trick at first, because the first thing he does is pull his lightsaber out on him.
Yeah, Ahsoka takes it with a grain. Everybody takes it with a grain of salt, it's not clear with Ahsoka and with Obi-Wan that it isn't really older Ahsoka. I tend to think Ahsoka met the daughter. Anakin met the son, and Obi-Wan probably actually was talking to Qui-Gon.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I felt the impression I got from it, that Qui-Gon was real. Ahsoka's was a reflection that the daughter was taking off Ahsoka, and, you know, that Shmi was a reflection that was taking off of Anakin and it's funny, the good side's sort of telling Ahsoka things she doesn't want to hear, and the evil guy's telling Anakin things he does want to hear, you know, you know, it's okay, you kill those sand people, that's all right.
Well, to reverse that, I mean, like, then he was like, by the way, your wife's a poison.
Yeah, well, that's when it started, like, turning, you know, and...
Yeah.
and like, you know, where they were, it was almost like jealousy, you know, over his attachments to Padme.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, it was kind of neat, but it's just so D&D to me. It's so like I'll get more into it in part three. Because I'm sort of starting to say stuff that I want to save till part three.
Okay, I'm gonna go through the rest of my somewhat shallow notes before I get into the real like super meat of my why I liked this episode so much. You know, there was a lot of fan grumblings when Rebels revealed that Ahsoka was part of the show. I remember reading these because many fans didn't like the Rebels design of Ahsoka because they liked the design the older Ahsoka design in the Mortis arc better. And so for me, I felt like the Rebels design much better suited her age at the time. But I think if we got to see Ahsoka like another 20 years later, she would more look like the Mortis arc Ahsoka.
I thought they were fairly close for being, you know, for having that. There's a difference in look to the two shows anyway.
Yeah,
you
and
know,
her
when you think of Yoda from this show and Yoda from Rebels, you know.
Her Leku and this are like way longer. They're almost to the floor.
Yeah, yeah, and this one is still like I said, I don't think this is like really her. So it was like a projected what she was. So it was the daughter looking at her and going, okay, how would she? She'd be a little taller. We'll grow these out, you know. So it was a reasonable facsimile of what Ahsoka would look like older, but it doesn't necessarily have to be what Ahsoka was like when she was older, you know?
She actually looks a lot like Shaak Ti from the Jedi on Kamino. She looks a lot like Shaak Ti. But I feel like Rebels Ahsoka looks like, you know, she's like 25 or 30. I feel like this Mortis arc one is like what Ahsoka might look like if she was like 45-ish.
Ooh, I didn't think. I thought it was. I would have put her in her 30s too. She didn't seem that old, but
I don't know how long it takes for Taruga Leku to grow.
Right.
I mean, but I feel like the longer they like the older. Well, not always. We've seen some really really old Tarugas, and some of theirs are really short. So they still have like really short tendrils. I don't know if they can like crop those. Ow, that just hurts thinking about.
Yeah.
Ow. So, but I just remember a lot of fans like grumbled about.
They tie a string like halfway down them, and then like it cuts off the circulation. They just drop off halfway.
Oh, that hurts just thinking about. But yeah, I just remember a lot of fans grumbling about it. Rest of my shallow notes. I had a crazy thought. Since the father is the balance, do you think the father and the Bindu are the same thing, like just in different forms?
Maybe not, although they actually talk very similarly in content and style, but I don't think they're the same beings. I think they're of the same sort of beings. And once again, back to Star Trek, you had the Q, and then you had like the beings that Trelane came from. It's like they're from a more higher, more complex plane, you know. It's almost like if you wanted to look at it in life, you know, the higher your lifespan gets, the more like sort of in tuned you are to be not being dark or light, but you know, if you're an ageless or near ageless creature, you're going to pick up dark and light and have a more nuanced and deeper understanding of what's going on with the Force or whatever. I look at them as being similar to the Bendu. I look at them as being an experiment, maybe, that led to the Bendu, mm-hmm. with Bendu being an improvement on this, on some of the ideas in this, but making it more Star Wars, you know?
Yeah. I guess what, because I'm going to spoil episode, I think it's the third, it's either next week or the week after. I'm going to spoil it, ready? Because the father dies in this arc. He dies, and so I just imagine, but I, you know, since he pretty much is the balance of the Force, I don't think he dies, so I was like, what if he just was just like, fuck all this, I'm gonna go be a rock.
Yep, I'm just gonna subsume myself into the totality of things for a while.
Yeah, so that was just a, like, then... little crazy hair thought. I was like, what if Father is Bindu, and he was just like, fuck this noise, I'm gonna go be a rock on some planet. Who are you, Kanan Jarrus?
It's very, it's possible, sure.
Another crazy plot I had, Father says that few know about them, and so I was just wondering, I wonder if Maz Kanata knows about them, because she's hella old.
Right.
I think that'd be cool if somehow they tied, like, Maz Kanata back into all of this, like, so, like, maybe she doesn't, you know, she doesn't know where to find them, but she's heard of them. I thought that was just a cool little thought I had. She's helpful.
See her say, I could see her, like, knowing about them in a legend. There's Legend of the Bendu, you know, and that, because she's sort of also on the edge of, like, is she a force, you know, she can use the force a little bit, you know, she's force sensitive, you know, whereas these guys are, like, almost just sort of, like, manifestations of the force in a way.
Going back to my original question about Anakin knowing he's the Chosen One, he says himself that it's a myth, so he does not believe it himself. Okay, anyway, to my meat of the notes of why, this is why I had, this middle chunk is why I ended up loving this episode so much. I'm going to break this down into, like, separate parts. You guys know I'm always a character person over plot any day, so the plot could suck, but if there's really great character work, I love it. So first, I really liked the talk that Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon had, for Obi's one's little bit. It's super rare that we see Obi-Wan have doubts. And he even says he's doubting himself as he's training Anakin. And this is different from, say, like, Rebels, because Kanan never finished his training. So it totally makes sense that he doubted training Ezra in the beginning, because he was just like, I never finished. But Obi-Wan is a fully trained Jedi Knight. And he's just like, Qui-Gon, I don't even know if I trained him right. And so it's just so rare for us to see him waver like that. And so that was just such a great moment for Obi-Wan's character, because we never hear him have doubts and stuff.
Well, here's a person that he can actually voice his doubts to.
Yeah.
And had in the past. And Obi-Wan being who he was and Qui-Gon sort of being who he was. I don't know if the term touchy-feely is the perfect phrase, but I have a feeling they had more of that kind of relationship where I think Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan were, like, discussed feelings more than Qui-Gon or than Obi-Wan and say Anakin do, you know?
Yeah.
I think there was probably a more open communication with that in that department.
Yeah, and because, like, I know we talked about it during the episode one thingy, but it was a collaborative commentary that we did, that Qui-Gon was a radical Jedi. Like, he was barely in the council.
Qui-Gon
because...
was, like, kind of like, yeah, like a left wing hippie professor at the college, you know. He's a philosophy professor at the college, and Anakin's a straight up jock, you know. Anakin's a patriot and a jock, you know.
Does that make Obi-Wan a nerd?
Obi-Wan is a nerd, yes, and if it was a college movie, that would be, like, their whole, you wouldn't think they'd all get along so well, but, I think Qui-Gon was a lot looser and more, like, you know, even though they'd rarely ever mention it outside of episode one, the whole living force thing, you know, there's the sort of mechanical aspect of the force, and then there's the living force that's more conceptual and, like, going with the flow and trusting your feelings and springing traps rather than, you know, parkouring and lightsaber fighting and stuff like that. And I always pictured Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan being more of the living force school.
Yeah. But I thought that was such a cool moment, because we just never hear Obi-Wan have doubts.
Yeah.
So I really liked that. I just love this entire middle section, because we get to see Anakin's reaction in dealing with his mom again and the pain that goes with that. I mean, because you see it on his face. He was just like, Mom, you're dead.
Well, at the same time, he's seeing his mom again, and at the same time, someone's tricking him, and he's kind of pretty sure that he's being tricked. That's going to piss you off when someone comes back as your dead mom and wants to trick you into talking to your dead mom. That shit ain't funny.
But, I mean, like, it's such a good moment, because, like, we also see his pain, and that's another side of Anakin we don't always see. And, like, we got to see his guilt in losing her.
Oh, yeah, and that's the only person that Anakin, besides maybe Padme, that Anakin could voice any, you know, those feelings, you know?
Yeah.
Or connect with his pre-Jedi life when he was just a person.
And we also get to see Anakin admitting that he thinks he's a failed Jedi because he knows love. Like, that's huge. Like, him not being able to let go of love, like his love for his mom and his love for Padme, makes him feel like a failure. Anakin Skywalker feels like he's a bad Jedi. He thinks he's a bad Jedi. That's such a big thing. Like, that's that's so huge for that character. Because, like, there's no point in any of the movies where he's just like, you know, Obi-Wan, I'm a bad Jedi.
Well, he's covering up. Well, there is. There is in episode 3. Well, no, that's more Obi-Wan sort of saying, I've been a bad master to you.
But, like, Anakin, like, says the words, I'm a failed Jedi because I know love. Oh, that was, I was just like, oh, my God. That's just, oh, it was such a huge character revelation, and I loved that point. And then for me, for Ahsoka, the final one, Ahsoka's message kind of had two parts that I kind of took from it, but it was all kind of the same thing. Her future older self wasn't off much in her prediction.
No.
Because if Ahsoka had remained Anakin's student, she would have been caught up in Order 66. And so she, I mean, we all know, like, you know, Ahsoka left the Order. If she would have stayed, she would have died.
At this point in season 3, they might have had that at least roughly planned out, you know?
Yeah.
And they had to know something's going to have to happen to Ahsoka's either going to die or whatever. And we didn't see her die in episode 3, so it wasn't an Order 66 type of thing. Or if it was, we didn't see it, but that, you know... So they were, I mean, they're definitely planning for their future.
Yeah, but I mean, like, she even says, you know, like, if you stay by his sides, you're not going to see your future, and that was true. And I feel like the vision of older Ahsoka is also reflecting, because it's coming from herself. I totally forgot what episode it was, because I know we talked about it before, but Ahsoka has already, someone somewhere had already laid seeds of doubt. No, it was Heroes on Both Sides. I just remembered it because she was talking to the Separatist guy, Lux.
Right, right.
And we talked about that, and she was like, maybe this war isn't what I think it is, you know? And so, and Lux was like, you know, I think Jedi are dumb. They helped kill my dad. And Ahsoka was like, huh, you know, maybe... Oh, this is weird. Like,
and then you have Anakin, who's just full unabashed enthusiasm about it. So she must have been a little bit like, yeah, wait a minute.
And we talked about that, too, because Ahsoka was all like, Anakin, I broke the rules like you did. And he was like, you went too far. And he got mad at her. And she was like, why are you getting mad at me? I did what you did, you know? And so, like, it was starting to plant those seeds. About and doubts about the Jedi Order, like it's starting to plant her doubts about the Jedi Order, about Anakin, and those seeds are like taking hold of her, and so this is just another step of her leaving the Order and becoming Fulcrum and Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
So like this entire middle section with all these, like, you know, it is odd. I will fully admit, like, this is a strange way to have all this happening. But between these three scenes, that character work is more than three seasons of Clone Wars so far.
Right.
And, like, about a 5-minute scene between
that's
the three
characters. That's what I'm saying. That's another one of my problems, though. It's convenient to do that. It's, you know, it's a convenient and easier way to do that than over the course of time.
I get what you're saying, but sometimes, like, for character work like that, I mean, if there's no other way to drop it, I would rather them drop it conveniently than not drop it at all. Because we've had three seasons of Clone Wars where any of this could have came up. At any point in the three seasons, Obi-Wan could have been like, Anakin, I feel like I'm failing you. Or Anakin looking at Padme and being like, you know, being married to you makes me feel like a failed Jedi. Or going...
It reminds me of the, you know, I'm sure I'm not actually pulling the writer's, you know, intentions out or whatever, but it has that feeling of, like, someone got a chance to write an episode and was like, really, like, I'm going to take the opportunity to do an intense character scene with everybody, you know, with these three characters, and I get to get it's almost too much at once for me. I like, the characters don't need this stuff, like, at this point, right?
Yes,
now.
Yes, they do.
They need it. They need it in the story, in the general scope of things in Clone Wars. But we don't need to have them. I don't know. Well, I'll reserve judgment on that till after the next two, since this is an arc. Maybe they do need all these what they got in these episodes for the next two episodes.
It just seems like
it's hogging up too many character moments, and it's all putting them in, like, okay, now we're in this place that enables character moments. You know, It's a place of strong character moments.
Like, where else are we going to address these things than this out of... I mean, they're literally out of time and out of space right now. Like, right. So when else are we going to address this?
That's why it makes it easy to do it this way. It's almost like this is the way that somebody thought up to address these rather than to have them come up. I don't know. Anakin could have gotten... accidentally inhaled some goofy gas during a robot attack, and while he was passed out, had a, you know, talk to his mom, or, you know,
that right there sounds far more outlandish than this.
well yeah, but it would be just one sort of outlandish element in a story, maybe, as compared to, like, everything being outlandish all the time through this one, you know?
I guess what I'm saying is,
we're in a land where anything can happen, you know, sort of thing. It's very convenient in storytelling-wise.
You know, sometimes I'm like the queen of, like, I don't like convenience. I'm right. The queen of that. But, like, here, I guess what I'm saying is, after three seasons of, like, fights and politics and, like, really not getting much character development out of these three, I'm happy for a character development dump. Because, I mean, honestly, I almost think about this. Three seasons, what is Anakin's arc? And character-wise, not a lot. Obi-Wan, we get Satine. That's about all we get. Ahsoka, yes, she's the one that's been growing the most, but even then, like... You know,
the only one who gets something that sort of really adds to her character. These guys, like Obi-Wan and Anakin, almost just more get catharsis out of it, you know, or it does add to their character, but it doesn't really advance their understanding or knowledge or anything. Because, especially in Anakin's case, at the end, it's like, oh, that was all a deception, you know?
Yeah.
But it was a nice character moment where he reacted, his reaction to it. Whereas with Obi-Wan and with Ahsoka, you know, that actually could give her, whether she did chew on that food for thought, who knows? But in what we know up into Rebels, yeah, she should have, you know? There was definitely important information in there for her. And,
Go on.
And with Obi-Wan, it was just sort of like he got to touch base with his old master and then got a warning like, hey, it's dangerous here.
See, I disagree. I think for me, like, I can see how this, like, you know, Obi-Wan going, I don't know if I even trained Anakin right. I could see him flashing, like, in episode 3, flashing back to this and being my God, I didn't train you right.
Right, it's a character, but that's like a character moment more than, you know, character development. It's a moment that we get to see of Obi-Wan that Obi-Wan doesn't allow himself to do under normal circumstances, so it's neat to see, but it's not, like, changing his, you know, it's not changing his arc, it's not changing his character. It's just a nice Obi-Wan moment, you know, that you don't get to see, but it's still just, you know, it's a good character moment. Usually his character moments are being, you know, either stern or sassy, you know.
Yeah.
And this is one where you get to see him. It's literally a private moment, you know. And, I mean, Ahsoka's there, but she's asleep, so it's him sort of being a little more unabashed.
So are these bad?
I just think it's weak writing. I don't think they're... I like to see those moments from the characters, and the one I like the most is with Ahsoka, because it actually, like, has real resonance. And, you know, I also realize you just can't have too big of a character motivations. As a matter of fact, I think all the Chosen One talk in this is like a little too much for Anakin to have in his brain going into episode 3. So it's already sort of crossed a little bit of a line there as far as what I would want the characters to know, you know, going in. It was just like when we were talking about, I think it was back in the Zilla Monster, where Wet Blanket gave Palpatine a sort of look that was saying, you know, there were a couple moments where we were thinking that Windu was thinking that Palpatine might be evil.
Yeah.
And we were thinking, it's a little too soon, you know?
I remember that, yeah.
And that's sort of how I feel with this, with the whole Chosen. I don't think Anakin should be messing with thinking about being the Chosen One at all at this point, you know?
Yeah.
But if I remember right, that may not be a problem after a couple more episodes. So I have to wait and see. But I think that was something that bothered me, and then they dealt with it in a manner that I wasn't.
I find it funny because Ahsoka was my least favorite of the three visions. Obi-Wan was my favorite.
I mean, Obi-Wan's was great because it's great to hear Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon. I didn't even think it was Liam Neeson, but I was like, the guy's got it down, whoever's doing it. But Liam Neeson's also a common impression that people do. So I figured, you know, well, it wasn't Disney at this time, but still Lucasfilm and Cartoon Network would find somebody who could do a really good Liam Neeson. But, I just saw Ahsoka's had more resonance to it. It had more real grit to it, where, as far as where it was a character moment and it was working on changing her character, where the other two, it was a nice character moment that you're not going to see ever, you know, you're not going to see those circumstances. You're not going to see Anakin hanging out with Shmi or you know, Obi-Wan hanging out with Qui-Gon. So they're a very specialized experience. So it's neat to see that. I don't want to use the word fanfic because it's not there, you know, but it's dipping its toes in the water sometimes, I think.
Yeah. I was going to say something else and then I was going to move on. I kind of wish I could remember what I thought of the Ahsoka scene before I saw Rebels. I don't remember, though. But I'm wondering if that, because now we have all this history on Ahsoka and we have the Ahsoka novel and all this, that scene definitely read different to me this time, obviously, because we know Ahsoka made it out and became Fulcrum and everything. Anyway, Act 3?
Act 3.
I think we argued too long on that one. It's okay. There we go. Act 3. Day breaks, and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka watch the planet renew itself with life. Ahsoka is worried about Anakin, but Obi-Wan comforts her and says that he'll be okay. And suddenly a dragon and a griffin swoop down from the sky and grab them. Father takes Anakin to an arena and says, "All right, guilt test time. Time to test your guilt. Face your feelings, and you'll know the truth." The son flies in with Ahsoka, and the daughter has Obi-Wan captured. They're poised on opposite sides of the arena. Father tells him that Anakin must choose to save Obi-Wan or Ahsoka. The other person will die. Anakin must let go of his guilt to make the choice. Anakin doesn't want to choose, and Obi-Wan tells Anakin to save Ahsoka. He also says that this place is the Force, and commands Anakin to use it. Anakin's got this. He taps into the Force and creates a beautiful star-filled storm. He commands the son and daughter to drop his friends. When the creatures go after them again, Anakin commands them both to the ground. He forces them to turn back into their human forms as he passes the test. The father is like, "Dude, you're totally the Chosen One! Congrats!" And Anakin's like, "Whatever, man, you said we could leave." And the father is like, "Yeah, but I sort of lied. I need to talk to you about all this first." And Father sends the kids, Obi-Wan and Ahsoka, away. Father tells Anakin that he's dying, and Anakin will replace him. And Anakin's like, "Yeah, no, I can't stay." And the father is like, "Dude, you'll get my castle if you stay. And I'll throw in my kids too. They're great." Anakin still turns him down. And the father is like, "All right, but your selfishness will haunt you. Don't come crying back to me when you choke your wife, burn up in lava, live the rest of your life in a black metal suit, and never know your kids until you're dying." And the Golden Trio find their ship and are so ready to get off this space rock. They fly away looking like they will get away without any problems. Until next week, bum bum bum. The end.
See, that this is where it goes south for me, and the father did not say, you know, "You're going to choke out your wife, burn up in lava, and live the rest of your life in the black metal suit." But that's what he implied.
Yeah.
And that's where I was starting to feel. And now that I know that it's George Lucas, it's like, oh, okay, it makes a little even more sense. It's like, all right, they're trying to retcon the whole, like, how does Anakin, if he's, you know, when you make a movie like this and they're like, is he the chosen one? You really don't want the answer in the movie to be no in some way. You want it to be yes, even if it goes there in a roundabout way, which I thought it did with him tossing Palpatine into the hole at the end. But now that they've built the prequels and stuff, it's like George Lucas, to him and maybe to other people, that does the whole chosen one thing doesn't line up as well as they'd like it to. And this is almost like saying, all right, scratch the whole chosen one thing in the context of episodes 1 through 6. He was the chosen one in this context, and him passing it up was him passing up his destiny, which messed up everything, and that's why everything turned out so messed up and why his life was so crappy afterwards. I don't like Anakin's Darth Vader's destiny being tied up in this single Dungeons and Dragons episode of Clone Wars. You know, and this one was getting me even more because there was more Egyptian stuff, and then they had a flat out yin yang symbol.
Yeah.
Although they stuck a little Mandela, little propeller looking thing in it to further, like, it was like yin and yang, and then the propeller thing, I think, symbolized the father as a third element that ran between, equally between the two. But it was still a yin yang, you know, and it's like, I don't want to see a yin yang in Star Wars. I'd like to see a representation of black and white, and, you know, there's a lot of yin yang philosophy in Star Wars, but it's done in a Star Wars way. So, yeah, it was just it was by the end of the third part that I was like, now I write down my score. I didn't really think about what I was going to score this till the third part, and I'm like, oh, that's right. This third part sort of sums up, you know, all the stuff that I just didn't like about this episode.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm the wet blanket this week.
Shut up, Windu.
Sick of these motherfucking D&D characters in my motherfucking Star Wars.
Like, see, like, my big thing about this one was the father's test seems flawed from the get-go. Because Anakin's supposed to let go of his guilt, but he's supposed to choose someone to die, which would make him feel guilt.
Right, right. Well, I guess if you let go of your guilt, maybe you won't feel guilt after that. That maybe you have to get... Maybe that's part of being in that tier of existence, is you can't feel guilt because you're beyond guilt in time and space and morality and stuff. The implication is if you're the father, you're going to be doing a combination of horrible and wonderful things, you know?
Yeah.
Which Anakin is capable of. He's capable of both of those things. He just has to not moralize about them, you know?
Yeah. Unlike you, I love the visuals of this episode. I've always liked just how the planet, like, just slowly went from life to, like, fall, and everything slowly died to, like, death. And, like one visual I love is at the beginning of this, when Obi-Wan and Ahsoka are coming out of the cave, all the trees have this, like, blue glowing look because it's
dead.
That
was the only part that really felt Star Wars-y to me, is there was a neat little physics thing going on, or weird thing that goes on in that world with, like, actively evil lightning that looks like it comes after people. And when the lightning starts hitting, like, there's trees that, like, soak up the energy and start glowing. I like that. That's very Star Wars-y.
Yeah. And, like, there's a part where, like, the sun was rising and you see the light going across the land and the trees are glowing, but when the sun passes over them and they're in the lake, they just, like, crumbled and shedded into beautiful full trees. And so I always liked the visual of this world.
It's good visuals. It just doesn't feel... It feels like the visuals on a fantasy quest video game rather than not a Star Wars video game, you know?
And for me, the one that, like, whenever I think of this episode, the one visual that always stands out to me is during Anakin's test, and the light... The floor is glowing with stars. like, and you have this, like, storm of stars and, like, the almost zodiac-looking symbols, like, floating above the arena. And, but I just, whenever I think of this arc, I always think of Anakin standing there in the middle of the yin yang, and light and stars are coming up from the floor. And that's a visual that, like, that's one of the, like, when I think Clone Wars, that's one of the strongest visuals that have always stuck with me. I always think of that, especially when I think about this arc. So I just think that scene is so pretty, because everything is lit from the bottom, and so rarely things are lit from the bottom. And so I think that entire scene is just very pretty.
It's like Anakin's peyote trip. It's like all the 70s movies when they take him to the Indian who gives him peyote and has his vision on the mountaintop.
But I mean, I always loved that scene. I always thought it was so pretty. And like for the first time, I noticed that there was like a zodiac looking animals on the top side of the arena that I'd never noticed before. I kind of want to go back and take a look at those if I ever get free time to do it. But and kind of try and figure out what those stand for. But, like, I just, is the scene kind of dumb? Yes. But I always liked that look of, like, also when the griffin's, like, attacking Obi-Wan, he has his lightsaber, he has this look of, like, okay, I'm fighting a griffin. I don't know. I always just like the look of that scene. I just, it, to me, it feels very cosmic and pretty. And to me, that arena scene, the look of it felt very Star Wars to me. Especially now that we have Rebels and we've had scenes where they like literally fly into like a star nebula and it's all stars and light glowing. So like that's kind of, now looking back on it, that's kind of what it reminded me of, those kind of visuals and space whales and stuff. Just to touch on another point in Act 2 that I made again, I like having these Obi-Wan and Ahsoka scenes. And, like they're in this test, and the first thing Obi-Wan says is, save Ahsoka. And that to me, is, like, just such a very Jedi-like thing for him. Like, you know, Obi-Wan is the master to both Anakin and Ahsoka. And, you know, like we said, he's kind of fatherly, grandfatherly role to both of them. And just to have Obi-Wan willing to lay down his life for Ahsoka, and I like that about him, because... Again, we don't always have that. He's the oldest one of the trio, so he's lived the longest. And he's like, you know, they have much more potential. Like, let them kill me. But, like, and there's just, like, a little scene of, before they get taken, Ahsoka's clearly worried about Anakin. He's just like, I'm really worried. And Obi-Wan comforts her. He's like, you know, Anakin's going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We're going to figure this out. And so I really like this episode because of those Obi-Wan and Ahsoka scenes that we so rarely get. And Act 3 just reminded me again why I like those scenes. So, okay. Hope has 5-minute deep dialogue, and Chris answers with Yoda. I'm just poking fun at you. Okay, so, here we go. Watching Clone Wars after watching Rebels made this episode really interesting for me. I've said this many times in the before that I like and dislike the Mortis arc for various reasons. And I remember watching the first time going, what is this shit with these Force people that are gods? But now, like, this episode's not weird to me, because we do have characters like Bindu and other Force wielders out there that we know about, and it's just another piece in this big old Force puzzle. Yeah. So, like, this episode isn't weird to me anymore. Like, it used to be so weird, and this was, like, such a weird concept to me, but now it's not anymore. It's not a weird episode.
It's a little less weird to me. But it seems like a failed experiment that was revisited it with better success. I feel that a lot of the concepts from this got reused to a lot better effect in Rebels and probably in the future of Clone Wars as we go along.
You know something I'm not understanding? What is the difference between these three, the father, the daughter, and the brother, and Bindu in your mind? Like, why are they bad and Bindu's good?
Well, I mean...
Or say, talking to Ezra or something.
You go into the whole thing of where maybe if Bendu would be the... If you put all three of them together, the manifestation of all three elements of that, the dark and the light and everything in between. I mean, what you had was a sort of father-son, Holy Ghost, sort of Holy Trinity thing going on there, where... You know, he's the father, and those are his children, but it's symbolic because Anakin can become the father, too. So you have just a symbolic role but I have a feeling that you're all components in the same thing. So if Anakin took that over, I mean, it would be symbolically they would be his son and daughter, but they would also physically, or you know, they would be tied together. So they would be his. They would be related. You know what I mean? It all gets into weird religious stuff in it, and a lot of it like sort of reflects, you know, Earth religions, which again, I rather have it instead of, and the father looks very Catholic. He looks very Catholic priesty, sort of, or old school, you know, chess piece Catholic priest sort of look. And I like Star Wars more when it comes from the Eastern religions that are more vague, you know. They don't have, like, where, you know, they're not talking about deities as much as they're talking about concepts and forces and, you know, manifestations of certain things rather than, you know, you have this guy, he's the father, and the, you know, the two kids, and you have God, and he has heaven, and all this, and, you know, the sort of personified stuff. I don't like my Star Wars mysticism personified as much, and when it is, Bendu at first, I was like, but you grow to love Bendu, you know? They pulled Bendu off really well. This was one they threw up against the wall, and it did not stick for Chris Honeywell.
But we've debated in the show how the Force is kind of like denominations of religions or different kinds of religions. Sure. I don't see how this is any different from you actually arguing, like you've said it before, the Force is like many different people seeing religions.
Right, right, yes. But these guys almost are, I wouldn't say they're like a different religion or a different take on the Force. They're like elemental manifestations of the Force. You know, this isn't a religion that Anakin's walking into that you can get converted to or whatever. He's walking into an actual, you know, it's like walking into the power plant of the Force, you know, and it's like, here's the generators. And here, you know, you're going to be the guy that makes sure the positives and negatives are balanced out so it doesn't burn up the wires, you know, that sort of thing. You know, it's very, you know, almost literal. There's a literal aspect of it. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it feels much like Chirrut feels much more Star Wars-y, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't really know what's going on with Chirrut, but it's going on. And he knows what's going on with it. And that works better for me in Star Wars than when you spell it out like this. And I think in the new Star Wars, they're working to spell things out more. They're spreading it way out. It's popping up a little here in the movies, a little there in the movies. It may not go someplace. Some of it might go someplace. Some of it might not. But it's just sort of like bubbling up here and there, you know. We're definitely getting more of a feel of the Force, that we can have the Force without having it necessarily be the Force, Jedi, and Sith.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be the Force. But they're doing it, they're taking their time because they know they got a Star Wars movie every year and, you know, and 20-some episodes of a TV show every year also to sort of, you know, tease it out. So this is just sort of doing that in one concentrated dump in this. And the way they went about it just wasn't Star Wars-y enough for me.
I will say, looking at the Wikipedia, in the Legends lore, the son and the daughter were worshipped as twin deities or simply as spirits in the Night Sister religion.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but that's in the Legends lore. And something I thought of as you were talking, the father, the son, and the daughter also in a way represent Anakin, Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan.
Yes. Yep.
Because the son is clearly Anakin.
It's a dynamic.
But I was also started thinking, I think Obi-Wan is daughter because I think Ahsoka is the father. And the reason I say that is because of Rebels. Because Ahsoka eventually becomes Fulcrum. She's not a Jedi. She's not a Sith. She walks the middle path. She's that... Some fans have called Ahsoka a Bindu. So I think she becomes the father.
Well,
eventually.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing is, I think maybe, but the thing is, at the moment of this episode, she could have been the daughter.
Yeah.
And later on, she could be the father. You know, you can change roles. You can be in a different role in a different dynamic, you know, and
because you could argue that Obi-Wan's the balance in this one.
Right, right.
Yeah. But, yeah, well, that's all I had now that we're like an hour and a half into this.
Well, you want me to score this up real quick?
Yes, and I will let you know in our talk I did bring down my score a little bit.
Ooh, I didn't bring mine up.
Oh, really? Really?
No, I'm going to be ruthless because this is episode 66, so I'm order 66 in this one.
Oh, but I had such good points.
You did have good points, and... But sadly, I was aware of those points. I see all those points, and I understand what happened in it. I just don't like the way they went about it. And I like the thing, and I even like some of the individual things that happened. I love all the scenes with them seeing the Force ghosts and all that. I like those scenes a lot.
Oh,
but the framework that they put it in to me is just unacceptably non-Star Wars. I'm giving it a 5. I'm sorry.
Oh,
you can bring your score back up accordingly to counteract me, and that would be fine.
See, I thought you were like, this is episode 66, and so I thought you were gonna rate it a 6, so it's 666.
No, I'm giving it... I don't want to give it a 6. I want to give it a 5 because I don't want to encourage it. This is sort of like a failed experiment for me. And it was a somewhat entertaining experiment, but it kept taking me out of it. The look and feel... There was too much of earthy stuff in it. There was too much stuff that, like, visually... and conceptually was bringing me back into my own were references to my own world, and I'd rather Star Wars reference itself. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind when it does, and I'm probably being hypocritical because I applaud it when they reference other movies and other genres and stuff like that, but I love it when they do it and it's still Star Wars, you know. It's like, all right, we just saw a Godzilla movie as through a Star Wars movie. It wasn't a Godzilla movie. It didn't happen like a Godzilla movie happened. It happened like a Godzilla movie would happen in Star Wars, while still having elements, the identifying elements. So the same with the samurai movie, or the stupid comedy elements of when C-3PO gets kidnapped or whatever, but. Still making it it didn't feel Star Wars. It felt video game D&D to me.
I'm gonna be really I want to tell you about this so bad, but it's in an arc that I know you haven't seen. I'm gonna try and remember this when we get to season 6, because there's another episode very similar to this one in
season
6.
So listeners, remind us when we get to season 6.
And it's the final arc of Star Wars, actually. It's the final arc. But there's... Because I didn't put it in my notes because I didn't want to spoil it, but in this one world, they have, like, floating chunks of land, too. And so I'd be so interested to see what you think of this final arc then, because they're very similar, but also very different. I need to remember that. Listeners, please remind me when we get to the final arc of Clone Wars to bring it back to the Mortis arc, just because, and how much Chris hated it, because I'd be very, very interested to compare the two with you. Because, yeah. Anyway. So,
well, you know, it's asking them a lot to remember that long, but remember, these are podcasts, so there could be somebody right now listening to us who's behind, and they go, oh my god, but they're already on season 6. I can remind them, and it'll be fresh in their head, so.
Yeah, so, I would love to see your take on it, because I forgot that there's characters in this that show up in that arc, too, and I would like to see that. Anyway, for me, Chris brought down my score a little bit, but because he's a jerk. To me, this is still a very pretty episode, and it's an all-character episode, which I love. I love the character work. It's so needed after weeks of politics and action. And I love these little snippets into the minds of Anakin and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka that we normally wouldn't get to see. So I remember seeing this episode the first time and thinking that the Force gods were really outlandish and stupid. But it's not a crazy idea anymore since we have characters like Bindu and Rebels. And I enjoyed this episode so much more this time around. And it's a good standalone episode. If you don't, because I know there are two other episodes after this, but this is a good standalone to tackle the mythology of Star Wars. So I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Whoa. This is the biggest difference in numbers we've had in a long time.
And before it was a 9. Before I took it really...
This is going to show up. This is going to show up probably in opposite ends of our season wrap-up show.
maybe, because there's I have several eights, and this one might be an honorable mention for me because I know I have several eights in this right. Season. Actually, getting into the feedback, listeners, I would really love to hear your feedback on this episode. Do you agree with me or Chris, or do you fall in the middle like a Bindu? I wasn't really in the fandom, so I don't really know how the fandom reacted to this episode, to be honest, when this episode came out. What?
I'm talking to the listeners.
No, but, like, you know, like, I'm happy to get feedback every week, but this is an episode where I would really love to hear feedback for. Because this is, especially since it's such a radical episode, but, like, new
concepts. There's a lot to talk about in this episode.
Yeah.
You notice we didn't go on many tangents in this episode, and it's a nice, long, meaty episode, you know?
Yeah. Listeners, as always, we would love to hear your feedback. You can leave us feedback on iTunes, Twitter, on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, we got a lot of feedback on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. For our episode of Night Sister. So take it away, Chris.
I thought we'd get feedback for this episode. And this was an episode but just from the content of Night Sisters, because this was an episode where you and I were both kind of tired for it. You could tell. But it was a fun episode, of the show. So that sort of rallied us. But okay, so Brian Weber wrote in, Monster Podcast Rally equals pure genius. And so I specified that is the work of Mr. Scott McGregor, or Scott 2.0, who came back and thanked Brian for calling him a genius, which it always feels good to be called a genius. I get it all the time. So then I said we would have credited him on the show, but we just didn't know we were going to use it when we recorded the show. And what happened was... we weren't even talking about monster pod racing. I think you were talking about like monster AT-AT or something. But I did the life day. And I thought I was being witty. But then when I went and came up with the life day and made you laugh and thought, wow, Chris made a good joke. But then when we were recording, when I was editing the recording, I realized, wait a minute, I got that life day. From Scott McGregor's ad that he made for Monster Pod Racing, which would be perfect in this episode. And the way that we said it, it gave it a perfect opportunity to just plug that in there. So it was perfect. Just kismet? Is that the term for what that was?
It is now.
Space kismet. All right. So then we got one from David Walker here. And he says, I've still not caught up on these episodes of Clone Wars, but... I'd encountered the Night Sisters before in what I think was the courtship of Princess Leia back in the day. I remember thinking it was pretty cool, but it's been a long time since I read it. I like the fact that there were other Force users who weren't tied to the Jedi or Sith doctrines. It may be my faulty memory, but I think there was a Night Sister riding a Rancor in the book, which pretty much makes anyone awesome. Yes, it does. It reminds me of, there's a game called Star Wars Demolition that you could ride a Rancor... And then we have another one from David Walker saying, so I look like everyone apparently, that's good. And then I said, it does mean that you aren't leaving the footprint in the facial recognition database that other people are. That means you could rob a bank and then they'll come for Sean Foster or Hope Mullinex. And And then I explain what's going on here because I noticed Sean Foster, you know, I mentioned Sean Foster's name and I'm like, oh, wait, he probably has no idea what's going on here and why we're talking about him. It probably seems really weird. What happens is with Dave Walker has been in a couple Photoshops, I think for Who True Freaks. And when I posted up the episode and then put the picture in Facebook, when you're about to post it, you get a little preview of it there. And Facebook will facial recognition everybody in the picture and tag them out, you know, with this person. The first time it tagged Dave Walker as you.
Yeah.
And then the second time, or no, I think that was the second time. The first time it tagged him as Sean Foster. And I remember looking at that and going, that's funny. I don't think Sean Foster was in this podcast at all. So I went back and checked the podcast. I'm like, no, he's not. Oh, wait. They just think Dave Walker is Sean Foster. So it's a weird quirk of the Facebook facial recognition, which can get Scott. I could take Scott Gardner's face off any blurry picture, stretch it, distort it to fit onto anything. And Facebook is just like, there's Scott Gardner. Ha ha ha. So I think David Walker is lucky that he's not in the Minority Report database.
I know there was an episode of Who True Freaks that they did, and I got tagged as David, and I was like, I wasn't in this episode.
How does that work? Yeah.
After this episode, I want the Monoman wafers.
You want what?
The Monoman wafers.
I was just going to ask you, I want to eat my, I have my Monoman wafers in my hand, I want to eat them now, but I'll wait.
I got my scissors in my hand to cut them open.
You got what?
My scissors in my hand to cut them open.
Oh, okay, so you ready to do the Monomans?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Thank you guys for the feedback. We really do want to, oh, they smell amazing.
Yes. I can tell you, I've already sampled the Monomans, and that's why I want to get into them, because I opened mine, and I ate most of them, because they're pretty damn delicious. Just to tell you what's going on, we're eating candy that Dario, I almost said Dario Argento, Dario Gonzalez sent us. This is from Israel, and it came in, he had to vacuum seal a big brick of this stuff. It's called Monomim, and it's his closest approximation of an Israeli Kit Kat.
And the reason we're doing this is because Chris was bitching about the sad, sorry state of American Kit Kats and how he hates them. So Dario, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat and Beat It, which has a new episode, you should go check it out, was just like, hey, I'm a flight attendant, let me send you candy from all over the world. So now me and Chris review candy.
Yes.
So oh, my mm-hmm. oh my god. Oh my god.
Now, what a Monoman is it's almost a nutty bar. You know, you ever had the nutty bars, the Little Debbie nutty bars? But it doesn't have peanut butter in it.
Yeah, it doesn't have the peanut butter in the center.
But it's it's like 20 different layers of wafer-thin wafers with chocolate in between them and chocolate on top of them. And they're very, like, they're crunchy, but at the same time, they have a soft softness to them because there's so much air in there with all this airy, crunchy. I love, like, I can eat nutty bars all the time. These are like a lighter version of nutty bar because they don't have the peanut butter in them.
Oh my god, they're so good.
And when you bite into them when they're fresh, there's a little dust that comes off the wafers that you sort of inhale that's really tasty too, you know, that just tastes wafer cookie like.
I think because it doesn't have the peanut butter, it's not as rich as it would be.
Right. It's lighter and airier and less just like super sweet. They're awesome. I swear, when I opened them up, I have, you see what kind of brick of them you're looking at. I have three of them left.
I opened my brand new brick, so
it won't take you long to get through them because they are just addictive little delicious.
I've already eaten like three of them.
We were talking, I think, two episodes ago, like, oh, you know, we were like, oh, we're not going to go to Israel to visit any of the, like, holy sites. We're just going to go to the candy shops.
I know.
Now I'm thinking that wasn't that funny, as funny of a joke. No, I'll go there just for some more mama memories. My mama memories.
This is the rest of the podcast.
Said backwards is Minimam.
Minimam.
Wow, that's harder than it seems. That took me like 8 tries to get that right.
Oh, man. Thank you, Dario. These are amazing.
They're delicious.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me in Sugar Rush Heaven right now at tutrufreaks.com, where you can send me candy at any time, and I'll eat it on the air because I like candy. We are a multifaceted podcast network filled with all these different facets that are all podcasts. By now, our Two True Freaks Twitter master, Gene, the podcasting machine, Gene should be back from his vacation and back to manning Twitter. He was trying to get somebody, hint, hint, to run the Twitter, but I wasn't biting because I hate that goddamn Twitter. I hate it.
I love it.
And, let's see, I put up a new Eat It and Beat It yesterday along with the last J Guys and Jedi, so that's up there. We're just cruising along, pumping out podcasts. Everybody's being really prolific lately, and it's great. There was a great meetup down in Orlando that I imagine is still going to sort of be happening, because I think probably there'll be a little bit of meeting of people who go to Star Wars Celebration 2, and Michael Bailey's headed down there. So you had Michael Bailey and Andrew Leyland all the way from the UK, and Bill Robinson and Scott Gardner all bumping into each other and stuff. So I'm imagining by the time this episode comes out, you're going to start hearing some of that on Two True Freaks too. So
it's going
to be a fun month. Looking to be a fun summer. Garage Sale Gloat's getting ready to start back up May 5th. I'll be garaging. Dario might be coming up and sleeping in a tent in my backyard for this gigundous garage sale we got going.
I just realized by this time next week, we'll be able to talk about celebration stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, though, we'll really probably be watching a teaser. We'll probably see a teaser trailer between now and we record the next J Guys and Jedi for episode 8.
I'm debating. Which one do you think they'll do more? A teaser for episode 8 or a teaser for season 4 of Rebels?
I gotta tell ya. Pretty excited to see, always to see the new Star Wars movie teaser trailer, because you're going to get some stuff to try to figure out in that. But I'm probably going to end up enjoying the Rebels trailer better, because I'm really involved in it more, like in a week by week basis. And it also is knocking it out of the park for me, you know? Mm-hmm. So
especially after that finale.
Yeah, I'm invested in those characters. So yeah, Rebels trailers in general have been very good at getting me really pumped up, and don't really get usually pumped up for TV with TV trailers. So, yeah, we'll see. I'm happy that I'm going to have to figure out which one I like better.
You know, I'm trying to think. I don't think they dropped a teaser at the last two celebrations for the movie coming out in December. I don't think they have it ready yet.
I'm just saying a lot of people are rumor-mongering that the rumor is Friday there's going to be some sort of teaser or trailer or, some sort of footage or something. I doubt they would show any footage or something, but they might show one of those little, like, production montages that they did for Episode 7, where you get some, you see some props and characters and maybe a couple scenes that just give away a location or something. So
I just thought of something. They're probably gonna have, if I could see them doing this, showing clips of Carrie Fisher in episode, like behind the scenes episode 8.
Mm-hmm. Well, they figured out, I guess, how they're gonna have her in episode 9 too, so.
Yeah.
She's gonna be, so, oh my god, I love this Minimam.
Me too, and I've been like,
nom, nom.
I'm like, don't eat more, can't eat more. Well, you can find me at our Two True Freaks Twitter page. We are at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. Also, you can find me at Hope Walnax, where I tweet about whatever, and a lot of times I live tweet shows. I'm behind on some of my live tweeting because I was away all weekend, so I'm catching up on my TV. And then I'm also the news writer for whatthefangirl.com. I'll probably this month, for the next month, be taking a very light kind of a news approach to it, because I'm going to be going through, like, hours of audio for...
Processing the con, yeah.
And doing a write-up for 221bCon. I did 3 interviews at 221bCon. I'm at the work through all those and getting podcasts ready. So I'll probably, this next month will be lights on my news for whatthefangirl.com. But still, you should still go check out what I do over there, because I also write editorial pieces as well. So, yeah. Oh my god, guys, please give us feedback for this episode. I really want to know what you guys thought. Like, I'm about to go to, like, the Two True Freaks Facebook page and be like, look out for this episode, because we want your feedback.
It's still 2 or 3 weeks in advance, so.
I know. I'm so tempted not to do, like, to do it, but I know I shouldn't, so.
Get out there. I want to hear some new people. Come on, new people. Somebody who hasn't written in yet that we don't know who you even are. We know some. Even if we don't do know who you are, please you can reply too. But I want to see some new names and faces on the Facebook.
But we also like our old names and faces too.
Sure. Oh no, we always encourage them. But yeah, I'm sure there's some lurkers, some listeners who listen and lurk on the Facebook page and don't really talk that much. Just pop, even if you don't even say, I hated this episode, I love this episode, or keep up the good work, just pop in and say, hi, I listen and lurk. That's fine. Yeah. I just like it, you know, it's good to know that you're out there every once in a while, you know?
Two things. For one, I have to say, Brian Weber has been commenting a lot, mm-hmm. So that's been kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And by kind of cool, I mean, like, really cool, because Brian and I are old high school friends. Also, we also love iTunes reviews, and... we made a call a few episodes ago about, hey, Eat It and Beat It has way more iTunes reviews and it only has one episode, while we've been going for like 60 episodes. We haven't gotten any new iTunes reviews since then.
Think about how many more people there are, the difference between how many people there are that like food and porn put together. Those people are, the people who like food and the people who like porn are being mashed together, even though there's some overlap there, huge overlap. As in 100% overlap, because everybody likes food. Mm-hmm. And Clone Wars. We're way more of a niche audience than Eat It and Beat It. That's what I fork it up to. And also, Dario's got it. Dario's good at mobilizing his flight attendant contingent. So, you know. I've got restaurant workers to ply, and you've got comic shop people to ply, who I'm sure you've already plied.
Yeah.
You've already plied all your coworkers. I've only got 2 or 3 coworkers that are going to be interested at where I am. But yeah. Whereas Dario can go food porn everywhere he goes. Hey, you food porn. You like those? So.
Yeah, but I mean.
Don't feel bad.
But still, if you like us, tell a friend, share it with a friend, and tell them, you know, write a review. It helps people find the show, and so we can make more friends and have more people join us.
Yes. I mean, I gotta tell you guys, you Star Wars fans, Clone Wars and Rebels right now, I think that's where it's at with Star Wars. I'm telling you. If you're feeding yourself full of some Clone Wars and then watching the Rebels as they come out, I feel like that's the, like... real mojo in Star Wars right now, so get on the train, get on the space train.
Yeah, well, I guess that's all we have, and next week we'll return to Mortis.
Toot toot on the space train.
Stay up on the hype train. It doesn't have brakes.
Get out of on the night train.
That's And next week we'll talk celebration.
Yes.
Woo! Celebration. Oh my god!
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.